Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Not spend a whole lot of time. We spent 655 hours of staff time on it, August 18th and 19th. I think that's plenty. And the reality is, certainly appreciate and respect whatever opinion is conveyed. We obviously contest several of the issues in there. I did see the bridge, the welcome sign was removed from the. I do appreciate that, since that wasn't something that the city paid for. But the bottom line is, we got too many important things.
Now, this is going back just a little bit in time, but Mayor D.C. Reeves, this is, I think, at his press conference last Wednesday, commenting on the Florida Doge report, which I have spent enough time on so far, it also explaining how silly it was, genuinely silly, and then that the final recommendations in there of, hey, maybe y'all ought to think about getting rid of towns, cities, and villages all over the state of Florida, because, you know, they just waste your money. Nobody wants that stuff. Maybe Florida should start doing this for you if you can't see the benefit yourself. It's amazing. The same politicians, okay, particularly the DeSantis administration, who say we want, you know, individual states to be able to do their own thing and we don't want a strong federal government, you know, a federalist system, turn right around and want to, by analog or parallel, you know, defederalize or stateize the state. They want to take away power. This is all the preemption, all of the restricting of home rule, or, you know, putting on you unfunded mandates, all of the things that they're doing consistently, aggregating power to Tallahassee away from individual cities, towns, villages, and counties, even to the point of saying maybe you shouldn't even have cities, towns, and villages at all. Okay, but that's not the issue here. The issue to me is, what was the purpose of Florida Doge? It was to get you to save money, right? It's to get the governments to be, you know, more cost effective. You know, whether it did that, I don't even think it's an open question. I think it failed to do that. But even if you think it's an open question, did you catch that number? 650 man hours just to tell them the stuff that they should have been able to kind of look up and figure out for themselves, but were not able to. So 650 hours out of a year's worth of how many? 2,000 work hours in a year, right? 50 weeks times 40 hours. That means they used a third of a whole person's salary for a third of a year to comply with this genius report. So the Florida Doge deliberately imposed a tremendous amount of government waste on cities and counties that it asked to comply with this information. So I thought that was fascinating. Also, in the State of the City address, the mayor made a comment that I just thought this was particularly interesting.
When I was in Washington last week, we got to meet with the head of global analytical research for Bank of America. And so the private market moves a little faster than us in government. And what they are doing now is, and of course, they've got mounds and mounds of data. They have all of you Bank of America customers. I'm talking about you, I guess. But they have mounds of data to understand money being credited and money being debited. And they told all the mayors, they're like, what we've in essence started to do is, we've, instead of saying 30% of your rent being your against your income, we're more complex than that, that we consider poverty if you're using more than 90% of your income on daily needs. So that's food, that's childcare, that's housing, and that makes sense, right? That seems to be actually a little more of a accurate statement, because if your rent is low and you have three kids in childcare, are you less impoverished than someone whose rent's higher that has none? So at the end of the day, what matters is how many dollars are coming into someone's bank account and how many are going out. So to try to attack that, not just from a housing standpoint, but from a childcare standpoint, is how do we help control costs and how do we make sure that there's access?
I think this is a very interesting shift. Because historically, the way you figure out whether housing is overpriced, underpriced, or affordable is, does it take more than 30% of your income? You know, if housing cost is 30% of your income or more, then you're spending too much on housing. And what he's saying is that at the Conference of Mayors, I believe that was the reference point he was making, is, and some of these other organizations are moving away from 30% of income and instead for housing, looking at the totality of income and saying, if 90% of your income is being used on all of the basic operational necessities like housing, food, childcare, I assume transportation is going to be included in that. The, you know, so that you only have 10% of your income left for like everything else that you might need to live on. That's a problem. And so it doesn't do you much good if you can make housing affordable, but childcare is outrageous. Or if childcare is affordable, but housing is outrageous, right? It's kind of the various things that go into making somebody who's income constrained, you know, be able to successfully live their life. So I thought that was an interesting shift and it made sense to me. Hey, if you have a problem in your house, a heating, air conditioning, electrical, or plumbing issue of any kind, Peden, they can take care of you for that. And a generator, either installed or maintained, whatever. They work on that stuff. 1969, Robert Peden said, I'm hot. I don't want to be. I want to make air conditioning, and I want to help my friends and, you know, people have air conditioning. So in Panama City, he started doing that, turned it into a business. Heating, obviously, a pretty good corollary for that. You can do both. And then plumbing, and then, you know, electrical along the way. Now they do all of that stuff all along the Gulf Coast. Started in Panama City, went east to Tallahassee, west to Pensacola, even now west to Baldwin County into Mobile County, all across two counties, even two time zones, everywhere on the Gulf Coast, 100% satisfaction guarantee. Good people, good products, good installation you can count on. And right now, with the changes in regulations that would go in and apply to, for example, air conditioning units, you can beat the annual regulatory price bump with Peden's New Year Old Stock Sale. Take up to $1,500 off remaining 2025 air conditioning systems before they're gone. Call or book online at Peden, P-E-A-D-E-N.com. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you or delays. Everything is flowing smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Why are the Olympic Games getting canceled by Brother Andrew? Find out next in the Transgressors Memorial Service.
Princeton Grove, a new affordable housing community in Crestview, is now taking applications for one- and two-bedroom apartments. Princeton Grove features a resort-style swimming pool, pickleball court, dog park, state-of-the-art fitness center, Energy Star-rated appliances, granite countertops, and, for a limited time, Princeton Grove is offering one-bedroom apartments for $799 and two bedrooms at $1099 without any application fees. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. Location, community, quality living. All starts at Princeton Grove.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio Team, on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the British phrase, His Majesty's Government, in the United Kingdom, as UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer's administration has been actively replacing the historical reference with the new non-gendered and non-royal referencing UK government. Obviously, this is a long overdue change for two very simple reasons. First, anytime we can degender something as significant as the monarchy, the better off we'll all be. And it's not lost on us that nobody tried to do this during the 70 years of Queen Elizabeth's reign, and rightfully so. To degender the monarchy under a queen would have been demeaning the importance of having a female leader of the UK. But now that King Charles has taken the throne, it's perfectly appropriate to take away the gender reference of His Majesty's government. As Precept 14 of the Holy Guidelines of Modern Gender Anarchy reminds us, anything which diminishes women is bad, but anything which diminishes men is good. Down with the patriarchy, amen? Amen. In addition to degendering the monarchy this way, we also love that now the UK is finally in a good position to prepare itself for its first transgender monarch. Obviously, there will come a time when a person identified prince at birth will discover she is actually a princess and eventually wind up in this throne as the first trans queen. Or perhaps the eldest will be identified a princess at birth but realize he is actually a prince and become the first trans king. But of course, it's entirely possible a future monarch may identify as non-binary, in which case we'll need entirely new terms for they-them. Perhaps Queen, or Keen, or the super fiercest one. But in any case, by simply degendering the reference entirely, the linguistic barricades against inclusion of monarchs on the spectrum of fluidity have already been stormed. But second, the monarchy itself is being low-key de-emphasized. The entire concept of royalty, birth order, special people entitled to political power, wealth, and even honorary status is, of course, entirely incompatible with our principles of equality uber alles. The real reason the Conservatives in England are upset with the Labour Party over this move is because they perceive it to be aimed in the direction of ditching the monarchy entirely. It's bad enough that American conservatives believe some people are better than others because of their economic contributions or their adherence to anachronistic sexual codes, but in Great Britain, some people are better than others just by virtue of blood and birth. And what could be more offensive to our anti-racist principles than special status literally entitled by blood and birth? So away with his and hers monarchies. Down with calling someone a prince or a princess until they're able to tell us what they are. Begone ye with restrictive gender binary titles such as king and queen, or duke and duchess, or earl and countess, or baron and baroness, or marquis and marchioness. And let us finally eliminate the concept of royalty itself and usher in a new age of gender-fluid, non-binary equality for all people kind, peasant persons and royal persons alike. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Speaking of repersoning and degendering language, our second loss of term this week is gunman. When used for someone who kills multiple people with a firearm under certain specific circumstances. In this case, it was a terrible event, which prompted the change, a mass killing at Tumbler Ridge Secondary School in Canada, 8 victims killed plus the shooter and 25 others wounded. What brought this case before the official Board of Language Review, however, is the fact that the shooter was transgender. 18-year-old Jesse Van Roostelaar was identified male at birth, but had transitioned to female around the age of 12. Now, normally we wouldn't talk about something like this because just mentioning the gender identity of a trans person in connection with a mass shooting reinforces the mistaken notion that non-standard gender identity is some sort of mental health problem which makes those folks more violent or dangerous. And of course, as staunch advocates of all people of the holy acronym string, we reject this bigoted belief, which is why we don't like to talk about cases that involve transgender murderers at all. However, in this particular incident, we can learn something important about language and the importance of gender inclusion, even when we talk about those who murder children. There was some real language leadership on this issue from Royal Canadian Mounted Police Staff Sergeant Chris Clark, who correctly decided to honor the gender identity of the deceased shooter by inventing a gender-neutral descriptor for that person.
That includes the deceased gun person.
Okay. And then separately, do you know the gun person's relationship to...
He referred to them as a gun person, and that is such an elegant solution to the problem instead of gunman. Now, we know some of you had raised the question, well, if Jesse identified publicly as female, why wouldn't you refer to her as the gun woman instead of using the gender non-specific term gun person? But do I again need to remind you of the basic elements of your wokeism? If a term makes women look bad, we don't use it. If a similar term makes men look bad, that's fine. So in this case, we recognize that the Mountie is really in a bind. Sergeant Clark doesn't want to misgender the killer by calling her a gunman, but he also doesn't want to disparage women linguistically by calling her a gunwoman. So that's why we really love the choice to use gun person instead of either of the others. Of course, we also want to recognize the immediate verbal compliance of the interviewer who internalized the clearly superior new word as quickly as Clark used it. And worth noting, we still recommend using the term gunman in most shootings for the simple reason that most of them are committed by men, so there's no issue with using a word that carries negative implications for males. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we want to talk about the serious problems with the Winter Olympics. First, as one of the great organizational leaders in woke ideology, we really celebrate the Associated Press for writing an article exposing the blatant racism of the games. As they noted, across countries, the most common feature of the Winter Olympians is the incredibly high number of them who are white. Although there are a few Asian athletes, particularly in skating and snowboarding, there are almost none who are Hispanic or African. This is bad, really bad, and it reveals the discrimination and disinclusion at the heart of snow and ice sports. The mere six members of the Jamaican team, for instance, five bobsledders and one skier, illustrate the absurdly low number of black athletes competing in Milano Cortina. As the AP explains, this is largely a matter of culture, access, and money, since ice and snow sports tend to be very expensive, thus excluding underprivileged minorities and also immigrants in majority white countries like Sweden and Norway, even though they have substantial non-white immigrant populations. The Winter Games are literally the definition of sports of privilege. Therefore, the AP recommends that more inclusive measures be taken so that athletes of color, their term, can be represented in future Winter Games. On a side note, we really enjoy the fact that the new acronym here will be AOC, since whether we're talking about the amazingly talented Congresswoman from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or the shameful lack of athletes of color in the Winter Olympics, we always want more AOC. But there is another much more obvious problem with the Winter Olympics. The racism is not just in the faces of the athletes, it's in the background of the games themselves. Just consider for a moment, what is the most prevalent color at the Winter Games? White! Snow is white. Ice is white. And of course, the athletes are white. Everything about the games is blanketed with several inches of systemic racism. And it's right out in the open, everywhere you look. The entire palette of the Olympic Games screams white supremacy. So maybe the real reason we don't have more AOCs, of either kind, is because they feel uncomfortable around so much white snow and ice. And there's simply no reason to not fix this problem. Obviously, dye can be added to water to make the snow and ice it forms be of different colors. So let's show a little inclusion in the tableau of the Winter Games and use tinting to include other races. We can start by having snow be black, or perhaps brown, or yellow. What could be more delightful than a giant slalom course filled with yellow snow? Yes, yellow snow and yellow ice, that's the anti-racist solution we have been looking for. There is sadly yet another problem with the Winter Olympics. Far too many of the sports take place on ice. And as we all know, ever since the re-election of President You-Know-Who, we are adamantly, vehemently, vocally, and ferociously anti-ice. Now, solving this problem of ice everywhere at the Olympics really isn't that hard. All it calls for is a little name change. So from now on, instead of referring to ice skating, we shall just call it frozen water skating. Ice dancing can be frozen water dancing. Ice hockey can be frozen water hockey. You get the picture. And every once in a while, for a little variety, you can say, let's say, curling is a sport played on a long sheet of sub-zero H2O. Simple. So we are calling on the IOC and the broadcasters at NBC to simply begin using the terms frozen water or sub-zero water instead of the horrible and triggering term ice. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Woe unto all who offend!
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
You like the yellow snow part, don't you?
I was like, I was always told to avoid yellow snow. Watch the little guys go down. Yeah.
Several inches of systemic racism. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by.
Can I tell you that you know what the hardest part of doing the transgressors every week is?
What?
Is like, I see you laughing, which is good. I like to know it's funny. And then keeping from laughing myself. So.
I know. That's why I try to look away from you so you don't see me doing it.
All right. Go on, sir. Okay. Go on.
Brought to you by ECUA, making service easier with the new My ECUA mobile app available February 16th.
Monday.
Pay your bill. Report service issues and recycling tips. No accidents to report to you or delays. Everything is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
And I only say this because there are some who always wonder, are they real stories? Yeah, the AP really wrote a piece about the systemic racism of the Winter Olympics. And yes, the other ones, same thing. They're all things that actually, this Mountie was referring to this mass murder of children as a gun person. Because the most important thing was to honor their gender identity in referring to the criminal. It's amazing. Anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. A federal judge is blocking the Trump administration from punishing a Democrat senator over a video he made. Mark Kelly has been targeted since he released a video urging service members to refuse illegal orders. A federal judge ruled Thursday Kelly had been reprimanded for exercising his First Amendment rights to speak. Two people are dead after a shooting at South Carolina State University. That shooting happened late last night at a student housing complex at the school's Orangeburg campus. South Carolina law enforcement says a third person was hurt. No word on their condition, though. And a John Wick video game is reportedly in the works. John, you might be interested in that one.
Yes.
Game developer Saber Interactive announced Thursday that it's developing a big budget game based on the action films.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. I know some people with a name that's very similar to mine that might be interested in that. Not me, but you know, my younglings. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Oh, did you see what Bradenton Police Department, Bradenton PD, is doing?
No.
For Valentine's Day? We can't fix your love life, but we can help you move on in the sweetest way possible. Help us keep our community safe while mending your broken heart. If your ex has an active warrant, give us a call or send a crime tip through our website.
That is so sweet.
We'd love to hear from you. Have an ex with a warrant? Send us their whereabouts. We'll make sure they get a Valentine's Day visit. Love fades, warrants don't.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The FBI is now calling a masked man seen on Nancy Guthrie's porch a suspect in her disappearance.
Authorities say they are looking for a male who is 5'9" to 5'10" tall with an average build. Officials also say the brand of backpack the suspect is seen wearing is a black 25-liter Ozark Trail hiker pack backpack.
Fox's Chandley Painter. Legislation to fund Homeland Security passed today. Fails in the Senate.
Democrats say a Republican offer to keep the Department of Homeland Security funded falls short of their demands. Dems want 10 actions, including no masks for immigration agents and preventing DHS officers from entering private property without a judicial warrant.
That's Fox's Madeline Rivera. Immigration enforcement would continue as normal. Some other DHS agencies would be affected if the shutdown drags on. America's listening to Fox News.
Six 31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 50 degrees with clear skies here across the area. We'll get to our forecast. That's up here in just a few minutes. Well, Pensacola does have a new police chief. Eric Winstrom was confirmed at last night's Pensacola City Council meeting. Winstrom has more than 20 years of law enforcement experience, including organizing security for large events. He says his top priorities are meeting the community and improving officer recruitment and retention. Police in Fairhope investigating some scams that reportedly cost people more than $56,000. Investigators say victims received texts asking if they'd authorized a large purchase. When they replied no, somebody claiming to be from their bank called, said their accounts were compromised. The victims were told to withdraw cash and hand it over to a driver for safekeeping. Police say you should never withdraw money to give to somebody that you don't know. Santa Rosa County is trying to keep big trucks off of Forsyth Street in Baghdad. Officials say those trucks have been clogging up traffic and could damage the roads and even the bridges if they're overweight. The county's now installed signs telling truckers to turn around. Some drivers say there's not enough of those signs, though. FHP was in the area Thursday enforcing those rules. Pensacola's Mardi Gras parades are happening over the weekend with a modified route due to construction on Palafox. PPD Public Information Officer Mike Wood says there's a parade tonight and another one tomorrow night. The route goes south on Palafox from Wright Street, left on Garden, and right on Jefferson.
So this is the change, and it went smoothly for the MLK parade. There were no issues, and we don't anticipate any on this one. The big thing is to get in there early, find you a good place to park, and get you a good spot on the parade route. And then after it's over with, we'll get you out of there just as fast as we can.
And Wood does say any vehicles left on Jefferson before the parade will be towed due to security reasons. The department has been increasing security ever since the incident that happened in New Orleans. Well, residents last night urging the Pensacola City Council to cancel the city's contract with Flock over documented privacy violations nationwide. Speakers cited instances where the license plate reader system was used to track women seeking abortions, surveil political protesters, and stalk romantic partners.
Through investigation, it was revealed that 12 million searches by 3,900 agencies between December 2024 and October 2025 logged hundreds of searches related to political demonstrations. 19 agencies conducted dozens of searches specifically tied to No Kings protests alone. Agencies used vague terminology to obscure surveillance of constitutionally protected speech.
And that woman also said in one Texas case, a deputy searched Flock data in what police called a missing person investigation, but was actually an abortion case. The search accessed 83,345 cameras across the entire country. Lucas Pallone said a Kansas police chief was caught using Flock 228 times in 4 months to stalk an ex-partner. It is 6:35 here at News Radio 92.3. And let's get a look at our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at a beautiful day today with temperatures warming up quickly around 70 degrees for your high, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 52. For Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, small 20% chance of a stray sprinkle. Otherwise, going to be looking at the clouds, high near 69 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 64. For Sunday, we will have those rain showers moving through the morning and early afternoon hours. 100% chance of rain, high near 68. Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 55. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 6:35, and now John Pickens with our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report or delays. Everything is flowing smoothly this morning. Nothing to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Your next news at 7. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Investors got some good news this week on the state of the labor market, and more may be on the way later this morning. A Dow Jones consensus forecast predicts that the Consumer Price Index is expected to show a 2.5% gain from a year ago. Data drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Treasury yields were higher this morning as investors anticipated the release of January's delayed consumer inflation report. The 10-year Treasury yield was up 1 basis point to 4.115%. The 30-year Treasury bond rose 1.5 basis points to 4.744%. Oil prices are moderately lower as Iran risks recede and amid oversupply concerns. West Texas Intermediate currently sitting at $62.35 per barrel. Brent currently sitting at $67.10 per barrel. Futures are slightly lower, once again, ahead of inflation data later this morning. Thursday, the Dow Industrials fell 669. The NASDAQ down 469. That's Your Money Now.
Build your team. Build it sooner. Need your match on ZipRecruiter.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You need someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now you can meet them fast on ZipRecruiter.
Need to hire right away. Start your search for strong candidates. The right fit awaits. All your roles, fill them sooner. Need your match on ZipRecruiter.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. And you're on your way to meeting your match. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So try it now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter. Try it free.
Selling a home is personal, and it can feel overwhelming before you even know where to start. A lot of homeowners are told that if they question the cost of selling, it means they are cutting corners or taking risks. That simply isn't true. Wanting clarity and fairness doesn't make you cheap, it makes you thoughtful. I'm Miriam Rogers with Poppy Properties. I offer a full service listing for only 1%, saving you thousands. And my easy exit agreement means you're never locked into a relationship that isn't working. You still get professional marketing, photography, negotiation, and guidance from contract to closing. What you get less of is pressure. What you keep more of is your equity. This isn't about doing less. It's about doing what's right for you, your situation, and your future. If you're thinking about selling and want to start with information instead of obligation and learn more about my 1% listing model, visit my website at forsalebymiriam.com. That's forsalebymiriam.com.
Welcome back to Winter Hack Radio, the place for clever hacks to survive the season. Icy driveway? Well, try spreading sand or bird seed to help with traction. Snowy puppy paws? Well, grab a whisk, brush it off, done. Catch COVID-19? Well, just get...
Actually, there's no hack for COVID-19. But if you test positive, prescription medications for COVID exist. Ask your doctor if they're right for you. Visit PfizerForAll.com to learn more. Sponsored by Pfizer.
You don't always have time to sit and listen.
That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 640 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, who, of course, is our state representative for District 2, which is the, you know, the beachfront areas of Santa Rosa County and the southern quarter-ish of Escambia County by landmass. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Good to have you. All right, let's talk about some of the things that happened this week. I want to start with... you guys are working on, obviously, budgets have come out. The House, I guess the House and the Senate both released budgets. I thought the Senate was going to be waiting for the House to do. What happened here?
So there was some private back and forth consternation about who should release their budgets first. And the Senate was finally just frustrated. I guess they just said, we're not going to do anything until next week. And then we released our budgets yesterday at 5. I think it was after my committee yesterday morning when I didn't present my budget like they'd hoped I would, and I just said I presented it to, you know, the speaker. They made an announcement saying we're not going to do anything. And then we released our entire budget at 5 p.m. yesterday, and the Senate scrambled and sent a notice that they're going to do theirs today. So we'll have the House and the Senate's proposed budgets both out by the end of the day today. And then we'll get to start working towards hopefully wrapping up session on time.
One of the things that you worked on in your committee related to budgets has to do with trying to make a dent in infant mortality, the, you know, early unnecessary death of children through health care related things. Is that right?
Yeah. So what I put in my proposed budget in my what's called a conforming bill is this idea to try and make these Medicaid companies compete. We don't have any real competition in Medicaid right now, even though we turned over running Medicaid to private companies. Like, the idea being, you know, let's inject some private capitalism concepts into Medicaid to hopefully drive value and savings for taxpayers. But we've never actually made them compete on anything. So my proposal is to make these companies compete. The state will withhold 2% of their revenue, and the companies that reduce infant mortality the most in that year will get to keep 2% of their revenue. Companies that reduce infant mortality at all will keep at least 1% of their revenue, and if your rate of infant mortality goes up in a given year, you will have what's called a freeze on your assignment, on auto assignment of new members, new lives, for about 4 months. So there's a pretty big stick and some pretty good carrots in there to try and actually inject some competition into this market that looks a lot more like socialism than capitalism right now.
Well, especially if, I mean, you're basically talking about rewarding them, paying them, incentivizing them to really care about the end result of saving kids' lives and punishing them if they fail to successfully save kids' lives. I love the idea. What is, just for, you know, ordinary people might be wondering, how much can a percent or two really matter to these companies? What kind of money are we talking about?
Well, it's overall, it's like a 50-some-odd billion-dollar budget, and so with a B, so 2% is a big deal.
That's 2% would be $100 million, I think, right?
You're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, every year that the state will either not pay out or pay out.
Wow. Okay. All right. I may have got my math quickly.
Each Medicaid plan is slightly different. Well, no, I mean, it's several billion dollars, right, in the program. What is 1% of...
Oh, no, a billion. I knew I was off by a digit. Yeah, $1 billion is what you're talking about. 2% of 50 billion is a billion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's early, Andrew, for me to do the math. But yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, you know, save kids' lives. It seems like a fairly straightforward thing. Very good. We also, you were actually one of the people advocating the bill that is going to help us get rid of these derelict vessels. It came out of Escambia County, right? Is our local, kind of our, government is the one that came up with this idea, right? Was it Chips or Tim Day or who was it?
Yeah, it was Chips and Tim Day. Just Kirchenfeld and Tim Day. So I presented it in its second committee yesterday. So it has one more committee before it goes to the floor. But the idea is it takes forever for us to do the paperwork on these derelict vessels to get them removed from waterways. So the idea is to allow local code enforcement officers to do a lot of the paperwork stuff, the pre-criminal stuff, before FWC can come in and actually remove these derelict vessels, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. So local code enforcement can come out, paper the file, cite these vessels if they're breaking rules or laws, and then have a file all teed up and ready to go so that when FWC is contacted by the county, there's a file ready, and FWC, really all they have to do is come out and remove the vessel.
Huh. I mean, I would think that would substantially unburden the state and make for facilitation of these derelict boat removals, which would be great. I mean, we all see them when you're out on the water. This has been a problem for forever. So just expediting that process, big win, right? If it comes, do you have a Senate companion?
Yeah, so Jay Tremble is the sponsor in the Senate, and then we started working language on the other bills as well. So it's an odd year, Andrew, between the House and the Senate for bills. I mean, there's almost no companion bill between the House and the Senate on anything of true significance. So the fact that I have a companion bill that's also moving is a big deal. But just in case somehow something gets hung up, I'm adding language to other bills as well, trying to make sure, you know, language is in some bill and it ultimately gets signed.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a process of, you know, trying to find different, you know, no pun intended, like lifeboats to add things to. And, my conforming bill as part of my budget will become a lifeboat for a lot of healthcare bills, most likely. So it'll become very large over time. It'll become like a train. It's just an odd year as far as us matching up between House and Senate policy priorities.
We're talking to Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. Alex, hang on for just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Brought to you by BathFitter.com. No accidents to report to you right now or delays. Traffic is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Alex Andrade. Alex, are we in the state of Florida going to be out $500 million for the money we spent on immigration enforcement that the feds aren't going to repay, some of which has come under scrutiny for being, let's just say, squishy on target?
Yeah, we learned last week that because Governor DeSantis had promised that the $500 million he'd spent on this illegal immigration, like Alligator, Alcatraz kind of stuff, would all be 100% reimbursed by the federal government, and none of that money's come. What we found out last week was, while FEMA apparently had like tentatively agreed to pay, the Department of Justice had held it up. No one's quite sure why. But this past week, reporters started delving into the actual money that was spent by the Defense Administration in this illegal immigration tranche of money that they're asking to be reimbursed. And some of it is raising some eyebrows, I'd say. There's, you know, $2,000 over two nights at a place called Liberty Bar in Tallahassee, which, if you're familiar with, you know, Tallahassee food establishments, it's not a place that you go to during an emergency. It's a fancy restaurant. There's a couple of those in there. There's a lot of money being spent on private plane travel. And then some odd expenditures on hotels. Again, hotels that aren't necessarily ones you think about during emergencies, like the Margaritaville. So again, there's probably reasonable explanations for the vast majority of this stuff. But at the same time, trust is earned, and the Defense Administration has been spending money like their hair's on fire on random things. And they just admitted this past week they used opioid trust fund money on campaign ads. So it's just an odd time right now trying to figure out how exactly the Defense Administration cares about taxpayer dollars.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we'll wait for the numbers. As you say, probably in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to add up to $450 or $405 million. But it could be a lot. And if the federal government doesn't reimburse us, then, you know, we're on the hook for it, which is a problem. And again, you know, $500 million, I mean, eventually it adds up to be real money. Hey, two bills that got voted on the floor this week I wanted to ask you about. The first one is a bill that you voted yes on, and that is to remove all references to the West Bank in Israel. That's the area west of the Jordan River where the Palestinians primarily live, even though Israel owns it and also is the governing structure. To refer to that as Judea and Samaria instead. You know me, I hate language change bills. We all know what the West Bank is. Nobody knows what Judea and Samaria is except if they read their Bibles, and they already know what that area is anyway. The one thing that kind of turned me around on this, actually, I'm kind of curious why you voted for it, but I did do a little research, and apparently the Knesset last year passed a similar bill where they are now referring to it as Judea and Samaria. Was that the reason for this change, not us initiating it?
Well, it was a name change that just seemed to be more historically accurate. If we're not recognizing and appreciating what the country itself wants to call things, I don't know what we're doing. So, just a different way to think about history. And, I appreciated the interesting debate on it. Like, unlike you, Andrew, I was okay voting on things like the Gulf of America.
Mexico.
as well. just because, you know, yeah. Every now and then, the names of things do change. So,
I know what you mean, Aaron.
It's the opposite. In this circumstance, it's the opposite. It's, you know, we should probably, you know, correct our own language to be more accurate and historically correct.
The other bill, and we might talk about this some more, but I was very much against this in the beginning. But as I read that the Knesset had done it, and the reason is to sort of remind people of who actually owns both now and historically that region, that we would use that name. Everybody knows what the West Bank is. Language supposed to communicate content, but I'm a little more on the fence on this one now. The other one, and this is the one, I don't know what your explanation is going to be, and I can't imagine you actually having one, but I know you're a smart guy, so you usually will. Why do you hate flamingos? Why is Alex Andrade the only guy in the House of Representatives to vote no on making the flamingo the state bird?
When was the last time you saw a wild flamingo in Pensacola, Andrew?
That wasn't attached to a mobile home yard? No, not ever.
right now the state bird is the mockingbird. It's been the mockingbird for a century. This push was to change it to the flamingo and to also make the Florida scrub jay the official songbird of the state. We have a lot of pelicans here, right?
Right.
But we don't have a lot of scrub jays. Scrub jays are Central Florida, and flamingos, if they are ever, are in way, way South Florida. So I don't think it represents my area of the state. Plus, if you're familiar with a woman named Marion Hammer, she was the NRA lobbyist for decades. She was inimitable. She's been a great lady. And back in 2018, I promised I'd never disappoint her with my votes. and she's a huge fan of The Mockingbird.
Okay.
And so it was a bit of a throwback and homage to Marion, who's now retired from the NRA as their lobbyist. But it was just a little bit of a throwback, just a recognition of her. And also, I mean, again, a reminder to folks, like, represent your districts. If it doesn't help your district and it's not exactly representative of your district, why vote for it?
Well, you had originally, when this was in committee, I very specifically remember you saying you were going to ask for the pelican to be added as the water hunting or waterfowl hunting or something like that. I don't remember what the word was, but it was going to be, you were going to try to add the pelican. Since we're already going to have the flamingo and the scrub jay, let's have the pelican for its sort of slice of the state bird share. That never happened?
No, unfortunately, I didn't spend a lot of time worrying about this one, one way or the other. But I did make some jokes about the pelican. I mean, flamingos don't represent Pensacola. They don't look like Pensacola at all. Like the flying fish would be a more accurate state bird, if we're taking Pensacola into account.
It wasn't
represented in my area.
Yeah, I was going to say the one thing, though, about this is since you wound up being the only one to vote no on this, you got to assume that James Uthmeyer and Ron DeSantis are preparing the Why Does Alex Andrade Hate Flamingos campaign. So, you know, just sometimes you got to vote your conscience or your relationship, and you just got to suffer the political consequences. I hope you're term limited out, so I hope you survive.
Yeah, I'll take those slings and arrows, and hopefully it spares a couple of flamingos.
Alex Andrade, state representative for District 2. As always, Alex, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you.
John Pickett has traffic on the fives.
That's right. We're still rolling accident-free, also delay-free. I-10, I-110, everything is flowing smoothly. Not going to see anything to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. If you need that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a great selection of good quality used cars. What they specialize in is cars that are almost new, except they were owned by somebody else first. Like, they may not smell just like the car that's brand off the lot, but other than that, I mean, they're like a year or two, maybe three, okay, 4 years young, 10 to 30 or 40,000 miles, cars that are in great shape. Everything they sell, they warranty to 100,000 miles or 10 years because they know they're only selling you good. It doesn't cost you extra. That's not a, you know, figure out the price and then, oh, hey, by the way, you get this. That's all included. They only ever talk to you about the out-the-door price, the bottom line after everything price, and that's what you talk about, okay? And so it's very easy to work with them. Good quality cars, straightforward people, trying to sell you cars in a way that makes you want to come back again and again instead of make you never want to see them again. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Add more road to your trip during the Subaru A Lot to Love event with a new 2026 Subaru Crosstrek or Forester Hybrid. Our new hybrids will keep you going no matter where the road goes. With up to 597 miles per tank, the Crosstrek Hybrid easily takes you to more places. And the Forester Hybrid sports a driving range of up to 581 miles per tank. Mileage like that lets you journey farther, and combined with Subaru's capable standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, you'll be able to handle any unexpected terrain with ease. Paved roads, gravel roads, just about any road. They're no match for the new Subaru hybrids. Get your Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid or the Subaru Forester Hybrid during the Subaru Lot to Love event. Love goes the extra mile at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Driving ranges based on EPA estimated combined fuel economy and a full tank of fuel. Actual mileage and range may vary.
The Leadership Pensacola Class of 2026, our community's premier leadership development program, is turning leadership into action.
Take a leap with us.
The Leadership Class of 2026 is stepping forward to create a healing garden for Gulf Coast Kids House.
A calming space designed to support children on their healing journey.
Together, we can turn leadership into lasting impact.
Lead with purpose and build healing.
To support this project, visit PensacolaChamber.com.
Join us in growing hope.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's.
Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sonny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sonny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
There's a parade somewhere
you probably want to know about.
News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Informative, local, dependable.
Are you the Judean People's Front? Judean People's Front? Well, the People's Front of Judea.
When I'm lying in my bitty net, I don't want to go.
You like that I used that one?
Oh, I loved it.
I felt like I had to after that bill we discussed.
Yes.
We're at the Judean People's Front. 6:59 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, John. Desperate search continuing today for Savannah Guthrie's mother. Authorities in Arizona say they've received thousands of tips, and they say this week they did reveal a couple of clues, but still no sign of the missing 84-year-old.
All right, very good. Thanks so much, David. 6:59 on News Radio 92.3. What is monkey branching? We might talk about that coming up. I know you don't know. That's fine. And why kids in New York City can't read regular clocks. Because they took away all the cell phones. And the kids don't know how to read clocks. Because they never had to.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3.